The Oracle Network.
Look deeper. Well, hi there, friends, and welcome back. I'm your host, Melanie Peterson. Today is the last vampire-themed episode for October, and we're going to wrap it up with none other than the Blood Countess herself, Elizabeth Báthory. The rumored stories of her sadism and brutality have spanned centuries, being regarded as one of history's first known serial killers and the most vicious out of any female killer. However, because of this, it's often difficult to separate fact from fiction, as more and more have referred to her as a vampire akin to the likes of Count Dracula, or Countess Dracula, rather. The idea that she bathed in the blood of her victims as a way to preserve her youth seems to be more fodder than fiction, but it didn't stop the rumors of vampirism from persisting. Now, this doesn't mean that what she did was any less brutal. For nearly 6 years after the death of her husband from 1604 until she was arrested in December of 1610, Elizabeth allegedly tortured and mutilated an estimated 650 girls and noble women of lesser standing. Some came to her for guidance and education, others for a job. And as the years passed after her death, the facts of her life and her crimes grew more and more exaggerated. One of the ideas, rather than her being an actual vampire, is that there were men in her life. In particular, Hungary's King Matthias II, who were jealous of her power and wealth and framed her in order to avoid paying debts owed to the Báthory's deceased husband. Regardless, the legend of Elizabeth Báthory has become synonymous with torture and death. Buckle up, my friends. This one is going to be a bumpy ride. This is Mask of Sanity. Elizabeth Báthory was born into nobility on August 7, 1560, to George and Anna Báthory on the family's estate in Nyírbátor. The Báthory family owned land in Hungary, where her father and mother were baron and baroness. Her uncle Stephen Báthory was the king of Poland, as well as the prince of Transylvania and the grand duke of Lithuania. So, needless to say, her family was well known and highly connected, pretty much meaning that they were untouchable, which is part of what afforded her the freedom to commit such heinous acts against her subjects in her later years. She spent most of her childhood at Eched Castle, and from a young age she experienced extremely violent seizures and most likely suffered from epilepsy. These seizures would go on until Elizabeth passed out, and it's said that they had a significant effect on her mood, inciting bouts of depression and sometimes explosive, rage-filled fits. And while Elizabeth's family enjoyed the perks of a family full of distinction and hierarchy, they had kings, knights, judges, and cardinals in the mix, there was also a darker side to the Báthory clan. She was the product of alleged incest. Several of her family members were reported to suffer from mental illness, but even these are not necessarily a predecessor to evil. To further cloud the prestige around her family, there were rumors that one of her uncles was a devout Satanist who instructed Elizabeth in satanic practices, and her aunt imparted her love of sadomasochism on a young and impressionable Elizabeth. Before Elizabeth reached the age of 10, she not only witnessed two of her sisters be raped and murdered, but she was also present at the torture and execution of their killer. She watched as the man was, quote, put on a hot iron throne and burned to death, end quote. Suffice it to say, Elizabeth Báthory was enveloped in a very warped and depraved existence from a young age, which would lead to the horrifying end of many women under her rule. In 1571, Elizabeth was 11 years old and soon became engaged to Count Ferenc Nadasdy, who was 10 years her senior. The match was a strategic one. Elizabeth was widely regarded as a beautiful, well-educated girl, and Nadazhdi was a member of a very powerful family in Hungary. They would marry on May 8, 1575, when Elizabeth was 15 years old, but it's also rumored that she bore an illegitimate child with a man prior to her marriage to the Count. This man, of a reportedly much lower class, was castrated and killed at the Count's order. After the wedding, Elizabeth and her new husband moved to Castle Kachete, a gift to the couple from the Nadazhdi family. For the next 10 years, Elizabeth lived at the castle while her husband, a soldier, was often away from home for extended periods of time. Elizabeth was in her prime and felt that her husband's absence shouldn't affect her, so she found ways to occupy her time. She took many lovers, primarily young men who lived on the family's land, and even ran off with one, but she eventually returned home to beg her husband's forgiveness. At this point, she was regarded by her subjects as a kind ruler. Often, instead of roaming the castle alone, Elizabeth would go visit her aunt, Countess Clara Bathory. Clara was openly bisexual and allegedly a bit of a nymphomaniac with a penchant for torture as well, and she didn't shy away from opening her niece's eyes to these, with reports indicating that Elizabeth also identified as bisexual. Elizabeth seemed to share an enjoyment of torture with her husband as well. In fact, it does seem like it's one of the things that they bonded over. Apparently, not long into their marriage, the Count built a custom torture chamber within the castle for his new bride. Each part of the design was according to Elizabeth's own specifications. In 1578, Count Nadazhdi led a large army of soldiers against the Ottomans, earning the title, quote, "the Black Knight of Hungary" during this posting and the subsequent Long War, and was feared due to his extreme cruelty towards prisoners, end quote. With her husband away yet again, Elizabeth oversaw, quote, "family estates," which comprised of 17 villages. There are many reports of her assisting destitute women and poor villagers in her capacity of countess. But it was also during this period that the first evidence of Elizabeth's evil nature appeared, end quote. Apparently, Elizabeth insisted that her husband write her letters, detailing the torture he was inflicting on his prisoners. These letters described sadistic torture methods, and Elizabeth took extreme pleasure in reading about her husband's brutal punishments. Feeling inspired by her husband's tales, Elizabeth began to delve into her own experimentations with torture, passing the time by, quote, "jamming pins and needles under the fingernails of her servant girls, and tying them down, smearing them with honey, and leaving them to be attacked by bees and ants," end quote. Before long, her reputation as a kind ruler began to develop into something worse. It's also noted during this time that she became quite infatuated with her own beauty, spending hours admiring herself in the mirror. During the rare times when her husband was home with her, he allegedly also gave her tips and pointers on the different aspects of torture and how to carry it out. In 1585, Elizabeth and Count Nadazhdi welcomed their first child, and over the next 10 years they would have 5 children. However, 2 of the children died as babies, but the Count and Countess would have 2 daughters, and 1 son survive. At one point, Elizabeth's beloved Aunt Clara, who was suspected of murdering 2 of her 4 husbands, was kidnapped and, quote, "raped by an entire Turkish garrison before being stabbed to death," end quote. The loss was devastating to Elizabeth, whose interest not only in the occult, but also in methods of torture only increased. She sought counsel in one of her servants, a man named Thorko, who embraced Elizabeth's interest in black magic by instructing her in witchcraft, as well as encouraging her torturous fantasies. Elizabeth even confided in her husband about the different spells she was learning. Quote, "Thorko has taught me a lovely new one. Catch a black hen and beat it to death with a white cane. Keep the blood and smear a little of it on your enemy. If you get no chance to smear it on his body, obtain one of his garments and smear it," end quote. No idea why the cane had to be white, that seems kind of incidental, but the blatant disregard for life at this point is what's terrifying most to me. To feel that untouchable, just because of your station in life, that you think you can torture and murder people at your pleasure, it just feels insane to me. How is there no accountability? Even when Count Nadazhny would arrive at the castle for his rare visits, he would always join in on torturing the servants and always have advice to offer his wife on how to inflict the most amount of pain. In 1602, the village of Trechin was rife with stories of peasant girls who had gone missing at Castle Cachete after inquiring about a job. On January 4, 1604, Count Nadazhny complained of a horrible pain in his legs that eventually disabled him, and he died not long after. Some suspected he had been poisoned, but others claimed witchcraft, and perhaps as a way to cope with the pain of losing her husband of 29 years, the now 43-year-old Elizabeth had a desire to inflict as much pain and torture as possible. It escalated to the extreme as rumors spread far and wide about her cruelty and about the disappearances of many peasant women who were last seen heading into the castle in hopes of finding employment. She had taken control of the castle and the lands, bidding some of her servants, such as her former nurse, Ilona Jew, and Dorota Gentes, who was believed to be a witch, to assist her in carrying out deadly assaults and torture on unsuspecting young women. Some of her most heinous acts included coating her victims, quote, with honey, and left outside for insects to devour. During colder parts of the year, young women might be stripped naked and forced into deadly ice baths. Bathory sometimes tortured girls by driving needles into their fingers, cutting their noses or lips, or whipping them with stinging nettles. She would bite shoulders and breasts, as well as burning the flesh, including the genitals, of some victims. The intimate nature of Bathory's attacks suggests a sexual motivation, though it's impossible to know with certainty what compelled her to act, end quote. One of her favorite acts of torture was supposedly taking a pair of scissors and slicing the skin between her victim's fingers. The rumors instilled fear throughout the countryside. No one dared to cross the Countess for fear of retribution. One of the more horrific stories was that, quote, one unfortunate girl was even forced to cook and eat her own flesh, end quote. Part of the Bathory story is that she also bathed in virgin blood, believing that it would keep her from aging and therefore maintain her youth and beauty. However, this belief, rumor, whatever you want to call it, which earned her the nickname the Blood Countess, seems to have been a fabrication that would add to Bathory's legend decades after her death. There are no verifiable sources that can account for this, so it's very likely that this was an invention of sorts to further validate the depravity that endured for years at Castle Cachete, as at the time, it was widely believed that a woman was not capable of violence of this magnitude, so any reason to help explain that was considered. Despite rumors that probably lingered more on the side of fiction than fact, not much notice was taken as hundreds of young girls between the ages of 10 and 14 disappeared and were never seen again. It wasn't until 1609, when tales of Countess Bathory murdering noble women began floating around, that anyone in a position of power began to take notice. Not too surprisingly, crimes against women of inferior birth, including the mistreatment of servants, was of little consequence to authorities. These gentry women had apparently come to Castle Cachete for guidance and education from Elizabeth Bathory, primarily for courtly etiquette and social advancement, but Bathory saw them as another opportunity to indulge in her sick pleasures. Since Elizabeth's family controlled the local government, it took nearly a year before King Matthias II decided to intervene after a Lutheran minister finally made a complaint to authorities. He ordered Count Gregory Thurzo, the Lord Palatine of Hungary and also Elizabeth's cousin, to investigate the allegations against Elizabeth. On December 29, 1610, Count Thurzo and a small garrison of soldiers arrived at Castle Cachete and began conducting interviews with villagers and those who lived in the surrounding areas. What they uncovered was unimaginable. Count Thurzo concluded, quote, that Bathory had tortured and killed more than 600 girls with the assistance of her servants, end quote. The following day, December 30th, Count Thurzo and his men arrived at the castle gates demanding entry. Now, Elizabeth, believing she was protected by her wealth and status, granted the men access, but she was allegedly discovered by Count Thurzo in the midst of one of her many torture sessions. Thurzo immediately intervened and placed Elizabeth and her servants, 3 women and 1 man, under arrest. Her nobility did spare her to some extent. Her servants were questioned, tortured, and they eventually went to trial in January 1611. They claimed they had nothing to do with the murders or participating at the Order of the Countess. However, all 4 admitted to burying as many as 51 of the victims that perished at Castle Cachete, either on the castle grounds or by sneaking bodies into open graves at the local cemetery late at night. They put all of the responsibility of the deaths on Elizabeth Bathory and even told authorities that another servant by the name of Darvulia was more culpable than they were. The only problem with this was that Darvulia was dead. They stated that Elizabeth would seek out the daughters of local peasants, offer them jobs either as a maid or a servant, and lure them to the castle. And once the castle gates closed, the girls were never seen or heard from again. Authorities under Count Thurzo also concluded that a woman who had allegedly used witchcraft to help Bathory was her servant, Dorota Jenses. Out of the 4 servants, 2 of the women, Dorota and Anna Ju, and the man, John Ujari, were found guilty and sentenced to death. The women allegedly, quote, had their fingers pulled off with hot pincers before being burned alive, and John was beheaded, end quote. A 3rd woman was allegedly spared a death sentence, but there's no information as to what happened to her. I wouldn't be surprised to find out that she was executed later on. Despite the allegations made against Elizabeth by her servants, which seems like more than enough information, Count Thurzo continued to search the grounds at Castle Cachete as well as conduct interviews with Elizabeth. The discovery of many dead bodies buried around the estate, as well as documentation supposedly made by the Countess herself, accounted for 650 victims, and Count Thurzo also had at least 289 witness accounts to her crimes that he felt was enough to ensure that his cousin was in fact guilty as suspected. She was officially charged for the deaths of 80 girls. However, because Elizabeth Bathory came from a powerful, wealthy Hungarian family, Count Thurzo believed that subjecting her to the same treatment as her servants could potentially damage the nobility and cause a scandal by disgracing a very well-known, very powerful family. It would also prevent King Matthias from seizing Bathory land, so as a result, she was not put on trial, she never set foot inside a jail cell, and execution was not even a plausible option. Instead, she was remanded to spend her remaining years inside Castle Cachete. They allegedly walled her into her sleeping quarters with slits in the brick just large enough to allow for the passing of food, water, and air. Countess Elizabeth Bathory spent the next 3 years confined in isolation, trapped within the same walls as her victims before being discovered dead on August 21st, 1614, at the age of 54. Now, friends, that is a pretty horrific story about Countess Elizabeth Bathory, but how much of it is actually based on fact? A lot of the accusations came from witness testimonies, but as more and more scholars research the stories of Bathory, it seems as if the entire truth does not line up with the legend. That is not to say that Elizabeth Bathory did not commit extreme and unfathomable acts of violence against young women and teen girls. No. It is very possible that this did happen, just perhaps not to the extent that has been spoken about for centuries, or even really what was revealed during the investigation. It's more likely that Elizabeth did abuse her servants and even ordered the deaths of ones who betrayed her. It's very possible that there was torture, but the vampiric parts of the legend seem to be just more to instill fear. In 1602, quote, a priest wrote a letter that discussed the excessive cruelty exhibited by Bathory and her husband toward their servants. The testimony against Bathory could have included true tales about how harshly she acted with lower classes. Such acts weren't illegal at this time. Bathory was only punished because her victims were said to have included noble women. But would still make Bathory responsible for many ruined lives, end quote. However, it seems as if there was also a political side at play in her apprehension and her punishment. Put the allegations aside for a minute and just consider Elizabeth Bathory for her status and who she was, aside from being a murderer and quite possibly one of the most prolific serial killers in history. Elizabeth was regarded as a very intelligent and powerful woman. After the death of her husband, she inherited his land, his wealth. She also had her lands and her wealth, and she ruled these large tracts of land on her own, without a man, land that was looked at as an asset for others to obtain. She also came from a well-connected, wealthy family, and it kind of sounds like she didn't take any crap from anyone, and because of that, she was a threat. What isn't readily spoken about in her vampiric legends is the fact that King Matthias was in a great deal of debt to Bathory prior to her arrest. He was originally in debt to Count Nadazhny, but when he died, the debt transferred to Elizabeth, and honestly, King Matthias probably had no intention of paying, so by accusing Elizabeth of such unspeakable acts, he could in essence let himself off the hook. The debt was supposedly so large that apparently Elizabeth's family agreed to cancel whatever it was, so long as they could be in control of Elizabeth's captivity, and therefore her family could take over her lands and her home. It seems even her family was in cahoots with the king. By arresting Elizabeth and ordering her imprisonment at Castle Cachete, her family was rightfully allowed to take control of her possessions, including the land she obtained after her husband's death. It's even been said that sons-in-law of Elizabeth knew about her impending arrest, and yet they did nothing to alert her, further proving that her downfall was more likely politically motivated and involved family betrayal. Hungarian professor Laszlo Nagy, quote, claimed the accusations and proceedings against Bathory were politically motivated due to her extensive wealth and ownership of large lands in Hungary. It is possible that Bathory's wealth and power made her a perceived threat to leaders of Hungary, whose political landscape was overrun with major rivals at the time. Bathory appeared to have supported her nephew, Gábor Bathory, ruler of Transylvania and rival to Hungary. It was not uncommon to accuse a wealthy widow of murder, witchcraft, or sexual misconduct to seize her lands, end quote. So which is it? A grand conspiracy to steal a powerful woman's land and money? Or a woman who had zero regard for human life, killed at will without fear of punishment? A woman unleashed from hell to terrorize as far as the eye could see and was finally caught? I'll let you decide what's true and what is legend. The Guinness Book of World Records has named Elizabeth Bathory as the most prolific female murderer in history, despite the uncertainty of just how many victims she actually claimed. The number 650 is most often used based on a claim that this number was found in a book belonging to Bathory in which she kept a detailed record of her victims. This may or may not be true, but there are many who believe that this book never existed, or that it wasn't included as part of the evidence during Count Thurzo's search of Castle Cachete. Elizabeth Bathory has also been compared to another well-known figure in history that has also spurred rumors of vampirism, Vlad the Impaler. Both Elizabeth and Vlad, quote, had a common reputation for cruelty, brutality, and bloodthirstiness across Eastern Europe, end quote. And because of this, it's rumored that Bram Stoker, the author of Dracula, used both Vlad and Elizabeth Bathory as inspiration for his novel, which I highly recommend if you haven't read it yet. To this day, the legends of Elizabeth Bathory generate a steady flow of tourists who visit the remnants of Castle Cachete, take pictures of a statue of Elizabeth, visit the museum, and perhaps purchase a bottle of wine from the company that bears her name. Regardless of what actually happened, vampire or not, Elizabeth Bathory has been rendered into immortality. Alright, my friends, thank you so much for listening. I really hope that you've enjoyed my October episodes and that you found each of the cases as interesting and chilling as I did. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you tuning in each week for all of your kind words of support and encouragement, and I hope that you'll continue to listen each week for as long as I continue to do this show. As always, you can reach out to Mask of Sanity on any of the social medias or shoot me an email. I would love to get some more listener suggestions, so if you have those, send them my way. And make sure you're following the Oracle Network as well. Check out the Linktree link in any of my social media profiles. It has my Patreon, my merch store, a one-time donation coffee account, and as well as other links for podcast players, so you can find something that will work to listen to my wonderful show. And if you need another little push to sign up for my Patreon, I will be releasing my first Beyond the Mask episode this Saturday for Halloween, where I'm going to go behind the scenes of a horror movie and uncover what inspired the film. I'm really excited about this. It's combining two of my favorite things, true crime, well, three things, I guess, true crime, horror, and films. And if you don't want to wait until Saturday, you can sign up for my $2 a month Patreon tier today and get access to this episode on Friday and listen before anyone else. And I'd also like to give another huge thank you to everyone who has left a review or supported me or just anything. All of the support, it just brings me to my knees every time. Someone even purchased a Buckle Up My Friends onesie a couple weeks ago. I have no idea who it was, but I am completely beside myself that one of you would choose to adorn your baby with Mask of Sanity merch. This whole journey has just been so amazing, and I can't tell you how lucky I feel. I really do, and I thank you for that. This show has given me a sense of purpose, a sense of creative purpose that I thought I had lost about this time a year ago. So I really appreciate that too. Please stick around after the show for the promo trailer for the podcast, Death by Champagne. Mackenzie and Olivia host a true crime and paranormal show where they discuss cases that are sure to keep you up at night. They cover stories of murder, hauntings, dark history, and they're all deadly and deadly good to listen to. So make sure you rate, review, and subscribe. Listen to their show. Give them all of the boosts you can. Again, thank you all so much for listening, and I hope you'll join me next week when I cover the case of Gilles Duret. Until next time, stay safe, friends. Mask of Sanity is partnered with the Oracle Network.
Hey, listeners, if you're tuning into this show, one, you have good taste, and two, you might enjoy another show that we host called Death by Champagne, the podcast here to keep you up at night. I'm Mackenzie.
And I'm Olivia.
We have topics in all realms. From the reality of true crime to the depths of the occult, we have dozens of episodes to binge that range from hair-raising scares to infuriating miscarriages of justice.
We've covered everything from the origins of Satan to the crimes of an unidentified serial killer in our hometown of St. Louis. Other episodes include tales of unsolved mysteries, murder investigations, disappearances, cold cases, hauntings, folklore, and people in history that are stranger than fiction.
In Season 3, you can join us for a true crime book club, giving in-depth coverage on cases living in the darkest corners of our bookshelves. Our first multi-part series is on the crimes of Gary Ridgway, focusing on his family, victims, and survivors.
So grab your cat keychain, surround yourself in a salt circle, lock your doors, and unlock that phone.
Hail Satan!
And pop some bottles.